thrilled to be back here since I haven't been here since I was a child. And had no foreknowledge of the influence of a country physician doctor or this amazing space of residual and taboo aspects of the body. So I feel quite at home, except for the gentleman who organized this space. And I see that once again, definitely a life such as mine would be extremely precarious, having been already burnt as a witch. And I recognize these forefathers here. So I began, of course, with this a shameless concern for the body, and I'm showing first early paintings before I go to the more developed installations and conceptual works. But this is important to me because it's one of my early news of the partner who's in Fuses, James Tenney. And if you look carefully, you'll see there are three pussies. Does everybody see three pussycats? Or you have to stop looking at his genitals and let your eye travel. So who has the three cats clearly already? One person. And is it about as many as have been here before or different? Okay, so I'll help. There's the cat reaching, because the painting took several hours. There's a cat curled up. And where's the other one? She's up there. That's the same cat, Kitch, moving around. So she's coming over the top of the bedpost. And I wanted that to include the domesticity of that. Yeah, as you'll see in the larger body of my work, the cat recurs and always means harmony, the privilege of a safety, unless I'm finding cats that have been torn apart by war and rescue, which is also a history collection that I have. So by the early 70s, I'm working with intimate details of the body. This is a photographic grid called Portrait Partials. It took probably 20 years for this work to be accepted as part of a proper examination of the body. It's self-shot, as are most of these works, so that that Portrait Partials precedes this work that I'm always fond of. It's about seepage, and it's called Saw Over Want. It incorporates childhood writing from a notebook where you have to write the same word over and over. So I found a notebook with the words saw, 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 over, 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 want, want, want. And it also included in the Learning to Write book, what does it say? There's something like a white cat came in our room. And what I did with this, something about the tactile intensity and naivete of the childish words, was to look at ordinary objects with that same freshness and intensity, and then to juxtapose those with body parts that, unless they've been sacralized or formalized, are also considered still taboo. So all the self-shot genitals being juxtaposed with ordinary parts of the body set up a perceptual tension, usually. I think they do, especially in, the process is interesting. One of the things I wanted to do was to degrade the imagery. So originally everything is filmed in 35 millimeter color. And then each image that I wanted was taken to the little ordinary color lab and printed so that the exactitude would break down. And then I reprinted them, each image, on cibachrome. So I was able to achieve a kind of degradation, but put it in an idealized final print form. But I'm reminded that bringing this image back from the printer, who was gay, he was holding it, and he looked absolutely horrified. And he said, "This is the most painful thing I've had to print in months." And I said, really? Okay. Does everybody here recognize it from your grandma's house? Who? Not you, Brian. You know what it is. Anybody else know what it is? What? You've all seen it a million times. It's a bathtub drain. The plug, what do you call that, rubber thing, yeah. But I liked how this work had this sort of undertow of making ordinary objects almost unrecognizable because of some often tactile reference to a bodily texture. I'm skirting around the larger body of work, but here's an instance of working with a group of taboo imagery in a photo grid that's called, I think it's called Ask the Goddess. And I'm juxtaposing archaic priestess images with traditional crucifixion image. The female crucifixion image on the left is interesting because that was the most popular for a time Victorian postcard. So it has this dark way of mimicking Christian sacrifice, but really it's a sort of erotic, necrophiliac offering of the suspended nude with a little wrapping that could be dropped. And then the images that are taboo above it are of, a child before he's diapered, an explicit vulvic image, and then a war wound, which is probably the most taboo and suppressed of any kind of sexualized or sexual reference. And of course, we know now that an enormous number of veterans are coming back with genital wounds because of the kinds of explosives. Does everybody know about that research that's coming through? No. All right. Well, you will. So, and this is in my collection of erotic references. This one is very funny. I hope you don't feel shy that some of these images really are intended to be funny, and that's a way to detoxify or reposition the darker issues that are in the references here. This is a Nubian sculpture. I have to assume that it's made by the women of the group because it's certainly about a certain aspect of male erotic susceptibility, and I think it's really cute. It's great, yeah. All right, I'm coming into the mid-70s because I want to talk about the aesthetic aspect of the work, the energizing imagery. And this, as much of you know, this image is from a long sequence that I worked on for about 8 years, up to including Her Limits. It starts with a neighbor pruning my apple tree, and I go into his harness to see what does that feel like, and also because I've worked with that kind of suspension and roping. And then that begins to relate to a more recent lecture where I'm using childhood drawings. This is a drawing from when I was 3 or 4 that I call the Ecstatic Cat. And for art historians here, I think it's really amazing in its simplification, the clarification of the recognizable dynamic of the cat head, and then this amazing gesture. The cat here represents an ecstatic energy, and I'm going to relate that to other works of mine without having found that cat drawing in a sewing basket of my mom's until recently. Okay, so does everybody know what this is? I mean, I found this image when I was working recently in Liverpool, where I first was able to produce the work, the installation Precarious. And I saw these things. I had no idea what they possibly could be, but they reminded me of something. So I had always wondered, what are those sort of energy strings hanging down from under the cat? And then I saw these on the building. Does everybody know what they are? You know, Cheryl? It's what? They're rebar. They stick them in concrete structures so that they begin to hold on to the next pouring. But for the way I think about form and materials, this was an absolutely wonderful discovery. And then I had to think, now how can I incorporate this into some work? So up to including her limits proceeds all through the 70s, where I want to break traditions of performance and teaching people and an audience and find a way to return just to drawing. And suspension on the rope allows me to do that with the agency of the rope driving the gesture of the hand that's drawing with crayons over the course of, could be 7 or 8 hours, but I can control the rope so that I can go up and down on it and from it. Then it takes another probably 12 years before anyone, anywhere, will exhibit the final realization of the drawing, which is to incorporate the process of it. So I edited, I did this work over the course of many places and times, and I edited all the performance work and colorized it, and it's very clear to me exactly when it was completed, because when I came out of the studio, the editing room, all the people in the studio were crying, weeping, pounding on tables, kind of tearing at their hair. I knew that had nothing to do with my finally having finished this work, and I said, what's happened, what's going on? I mean, Kennedy was already shot, Luther King was already dead, Warhol was already dead, what's happening? And they said, John Lennon was just assassinated. So that was the very moment when this editing was complete. Another work that incorporates the performative action of the body with the morphology of related form, Venus Vectors, is this is a 6-foot round version of what should be a 10-foot high by 8-foot installation where you would walk in. The various panels are transparent and translucent so that when you're looking at one, you're seeing through the others, and I wanted that almost collage-like superimposition. So Volva's Morphia is relatively recent. It's in the 90s, and it's a vocabulary of forms that are vulvic, the ones 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3 in those linear shapes, they're all Paleolithic versions of vulvic depiction. And I'm very taken by them because they have no exactitude. There's no specific agreement. They're full of a sense of variation and exploration. This was a work that had a complex text and many dozens of images relating to various forms of contemporary and historic suppression concerning female genital depiction. And I was having a lot of trouble trying to realize how to formulate these images in the text. And then, as some of you know, I have a very angry man voice who appears in dreams. He's always very annoyed with me, and he tells me what to do. And with this work, he said, and I was asleep, he woke me up dreaming, and he said, there's a pile of papers upstairs and a pile of photographs, and they don't make sense, and you'll never be an artist properly unless you solve that problem. I said, okay. He said, why don't you let Volva do the talking? So I woke up, I said, that's a good idea. So I went upstairs, I grabbed my notebook, and I showed him, the pile of research on the Pope, who is just declaring feminists witches and ungodly, and then pile of research on Lacan, who had insisted that female sexuality was only absence and lack. And then stuff from Masters and Johnson and from Texas University group that were kicking out young women who got pregnant. So I asked Volvo to just give me one word for each, one sentence, and she did. And then I was able to realize vulva's morphia. So you can't see the text clearly, but let's see. Vulva deciphers Lacan and Baudrillard and discovers she is only a sign, a signification of the void, of what is not male. She is given a pen for taking notes. Vulva reads biology and understands she is an amalgam of proteins and oxytocin hormones, which govern all her desires. So all these ironic statements are funny because they come out of a great realm of fury. So because we're in this historic environment and devoted to aspects of healing and investigation of anomalies of the body, anomalies in medical history, I decided that for tonight I would show work in a context that I've never done before because it's been personally too uneasy, too disturbing. And so the center of my presentation tonight is about exorcism and healing from a lived position. And I'm starting with this projection that's called Jim's Lungs. When my original partner, James Tenney, who's the partner in Fuses, was diagnosed with lung cancer after we were no longer together, I found that to be an unbearable circumstance. And I began to concentrate on aspects of cancer that I really knew nothing about. So I had my father's old Gray's Anatomy. That was fun. And I guess I should mention here, my dad wouldn't let me go to college because that was a waste for a girl, but he let me have all his medical books to look at. So Gray's Anatomy helped me to find out what are the lymphs. What are leukocytes? What is the membrane in the lung? What's happening with the thorax? So these elements were combined as a kind of, almost a kind of voodoo to try to push away the cancer, to try to see what are these elements that are in danger. Jim survived. He had an 8% chance to survive this particular lung cancer. And in these years, he did survive. And when he saw this, he said, I think this is why I'm still here. So I was so amazed and touched. And then more recently, the lung cancer came back, and he did not survive this more recent time. So all through the 60s, I'm trying to imagine how to bring forbidden aspects of the body into my work. So I decide I want to build these sculptures that are based on interior organs. So this was what I wanted to make of a liver, or a group of livers, rocks, blankets with a sea of bile, drapery, blankets, but it would be appealing. It would be a kind of picnic place where these livers would invite people to come and picnic and climb around. So this is one of the drawings from, I think they're 68 and 66. So they're modest-sized watercolors. And the intention was to motorize and build all these elements. So you can see the two figures in a doorway entering the genital playroom. This is a cutaway section with sensors that I was never able to include. The viewers could come and activate all these various parts. This is the gut room, gorilla gut room. It's a body part in which the most radical people could plan transformations. So right now it would be part of Adbuster's campaign. I can't quite make out what it says, but... And this is another genital playroom version, all soft sculpture. You can see the scale of it. There are little figures climbing up on ladders that want to enter various concave and convex parts of the sculpture. This heart cunt chamber would have ladders in it with soft sides. So sad to say, none of these sculptures have been built as such. So here's a sequence of images that counter traditional medicine that could never be shown to my father and would surely be hugely disapproved by the eminence figures here, with the exception of one professor named Coley, who developed an anti-cancer vaccine that has not been used for years, but I'll tell what it does. So when I'm diagnosed 15 years ago with two kinds of cancer, just because I had a little pain, nothing to care about, but once they started looking around, they discovered I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and breast cancer, and I was told that I should have a radical mastectomy, long-chain radiation, and chemo. And I guess I was lucky that my oncologist, who was head of a very important cancer center upstate New York, said I could come to the meeting about my illness. And that was amazing because the surgeon said what to do, and there were 10 kinds of doctors who all said what to do, and it was all horrifying. So I went back to my main doctor, and I said, and his name was so, the word was so strong in my mind, I said, have you had any patients who bolted? And he said, no, they wouldn't bolt, that's life-threatening. No one has bolted. I got a bolt. So one of the things that helped me bolt was, but I should mention what's here. So in order, after a lot of research, I decided to go to the Gerson Center in Playa Tijuana in Mexico. Has anyone heard of it here? Oh, it's very esoteric, I see. Huh? It's one of the earliest therapies for detox and immune building. So I decided to go there because it seems to me that the traditional recommendations, I do say to my oncologist, you know, I have a feeling I'd rather have death than your recommendations. What would the death be like? And he says, really terrible. You're unspeakably terrible, you know, you'll lose your lungs and you'll be all swollen, and it still sounds like maybe I could try. So I go to this alternative little place in Tijuana, far away. And one of the things that you do, this is a coffee enema bucket. One of the things they do is to get you very familiar with this kind of cleansing. You have to get used to it. You can read a whole mystery novel while they're teaching you this process. And it's not just cleaning, it's to activate bile, which will revivify the red blood cells. Here are the cheerful companions at their boring carrot juice and steamed vegetables. So the diet is very strict. No butter, no cheese, no bread, no meat, no coffee. What did I forget? And here I had this horrible nurse, Nancy. She was just like somebody that escaped from some Hollywood horror movie. And of course, she did the injections. These are my own bad cells. So I want to study them. I want to paint them. I want to look at them. They don't look so bad to me, but I understand they can kill you. So I start drawing incessantly. For instance, see that great big kind of sunburst with its little lymphocytes? That's a really aggressive, happy cancer cell, highly enlarged. Look how optimistic and sure of itself it seems to be, right? So, and these are drawings that I'm trying to make of, I can't see inside, but I'm trying to have some contact with it. I don't know if I have another image of that particular drawing. Well, I'm trying to keep them. And I did. But look at that bright, optimistic sunburst of a cancer cell, and the little white fluffs around it are lymphocytes. So here's a very personal piece of history that leads to aesthetic work. I have a dream lying in that horrible little cot you've seen of the angry man arrives. And I've just had a dream of a group of girl hockey players with a puck and the sticks, and they're sitting around in little plaid skirts. And there's something disturbing about the dream, and I tell my wonderful doctor, Dr. Artunio, I said, I have this funny dream. And he said, and I said, I had it twice. I went back to sleep and it happened again with this angry man. And he said, probably in Spanish, he said, oh, this makes perfect sense. This is a very useful dream. The little white puffs are lymphocytes, and they're the pucks that the hockey team has to stand up and start hitting them, whack them, knock them out. I said, really? He said, yes, go back and dream that again. And when you see the hockey puck, let it be the lymphocytes that's going to go in there and smash the cancer cell. I said, well, I'll try that. Okay. This nurse, Felicia. So, but at this point, after a week in the hospital, my wall is covered with drawings that are attempting to see inside. Meanwhile, outside, in this miserable little village, the local people are chopping down the last of the beautiful trees in the village. And somehow that's very symbolic of my situation. I go out and I sit on the end of the trees. But I keep working and I don't know what's going to happen. Until finally I get home with all these paintings and drawings and photographs and concepts for moving the inside material into a form. I have to make work out of it. On the far left, you can see those silver silhouettes of breasts. I've been casting rubber molds over my breasts and having them be part of this examination of elements that begin to include images of witches in medieval depictions being slashed to bits, the evil witch. And then I begin to think maybe the evil witch is a form of Western medicine, or else I'm the witch. One of the things we learn to do in the little hospital is to give ourselves injections, but they never teach us to put the needle in your own behind. You have an orange every day, like a real orange, and you practice stabbing your orange with a needle and somehow putting water or something in the syringe, and then when you try to do it, it's nothing like that at all, you know. The syringe doesn't work the way you thought it would, and how much you want to hurt yourself with the needle because you were not an orange. It takes practice. And so they also use a kind of, I forget what it's called, you probably know it. You use it in acupuncture and different kinds of healing. You heat up this glass. It's a beautiful sort of glass thing. You heat it up, and then it's used on the back to bring energy to places that feel constricted or just need more energy. Do you know what it's called? What's it called?
Cupping.
Cupping, exactly. Yeah, so they're beautiful. I want a lot of those in my work. And then I build this part of an installation with these floating oranges that have all the needles that I've had to use in them. And the cuppings on glass underneath. I change the oranges in the installation probably every 10 days. The cuppings remain. And then as part of this exhibit, I've taken all the casting of the breasts that are now in a polyurethane, and they're lit from beneath, and they'll relate to images on the TV from the hospital. The straw is very important because part of the sequence of destroying the cancer cell is that when the lymphocytes get very aggressive, and it takes a lot to alarm them properly, they attack that bright cancer cell by injecting it with a material that's like kind of like alcohol. And so with enlarged microscopic work, you can see the cancer cell shrivel, and it turns into this kind of straw, like a witch's hair. So those are some of the metaphors that were keeping me alive. Thank you.